The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here is your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. Our guest today in the studio is Nathan Prill, Executive Director from the Huron County Office of the Farm Service Agency. We're going to be talking about some of the farm programs. They're getting a little more up to speed on what the new farm bill is going to mean and how it's going to affect farmers in Huron County. So welcome to the program.
Great to be here.
So how is the farm bill working out? Are you learning more and more about it and trying to get things set for what farmers need to know for this growing season coming up?
Well, at the end of the year, we're always busy with commodity loans. Of course, farmers that have commodities stored on their farm can take sort of like an operating loan through the Farm Service Agency throughout for the rest of the marketing year. And that's a 1% loan on grain that's stored on the farm. So we've just finished the bulk of that workload, and now we're ready to tackle the new programs with the Farm Bill that, of course, was passed last February. They finally got the handbooks written, published some of the rules, gone through some of the question periods, and now we're starting to get some forms and really get into the bulk of signing up what is actually going to be a 2014 sign-up in the programs that will replace the direct program in the Huron County office.
Now, how do you do a 2014 program when it's 2015 already? I mean, are we backdating this program to when they enacted it? Or
there's a good part to it and a bad part to it. The good part is the payments were always going to be delayed by 1 year because the new program has to go through an entire marketing year before we can actually figure out where the payments will be. So the 2014 payments were never technically supposed to be due until October of 2015. So it'll feel a little bit more normal. You'll have your enrollment and then you'll receive your payment within a few months of that. The bad part is a lot of farmers thinking that there wasn't going to be any more farm programs, didn't report crops in 2014, didn't update farm records in 2014. So now we're going to have this interesting process where we have to essentially do all of our 2014 work and enrollments and program selection, and then basically do the exact same thing for 2015 at the same time. So of course, in this area, our farmers are you know, dynamic business people. Their land footprint is changing every year. Their operations are changing every year. And so trying to capture 14 and 15 at the same time is going to be difficult, but we think we can get that completed. We can get that taken care of this summer.
Isn't that kind of, you know, that's like saying, you know, I'm going to buy car insurance. It's good for last year. If I had an accident, I should buy it. If I didn't have an accident, why would I buy it? You know what I mean? It just seems like it's kind of counterintuitive.
Well, and that's what we're running into. So especially with our dairy program sign-up that we just completed, since these are now reflective of what actual prices are, it's not like the olden days where you'd sign up, you'd get a payment based on your base acres. These new programs really are functioning based on what's happening in the market. If milk prices fall, they have to fall to a certain level. You have to be enrolled in the program. You can buy up coverage. So when you're enrolling, when you already know some of the market conditions, it can influence your decision making, but there's still enough variability in agriculture that everyone still has a different sense of where these commodity prices are going. Some feel that commodity prices could weaken substantially in the year, and others feel that it's going to be maybe stable with where we're at right now. So even if you thought you knew exactly what you should do, the market could always influence your decision making and make you look like a genius or make you look like a complete failure. That's what commodity prices are good at doing to all of us.
And there's other factors involved in this, though. There's only so much you can get from the government in most of these programs, isn't there? It isn't like, you know, if you have a CAFO dairy farm and you have 200, you know, if you get a maximum of 100 grand, you know, you get it for it's a lot different than the CAFO, which has, you know, many, many, many more times cows.
Well, at least with the dairy program, before we only really did have price supports for operations that were a production equivalent of about 150 cows. In the new program, since it functions like insurance, since farmers are paying their own premiums if they buy up from the base level coverage for milk, actually we do cover all production.
Oh, wow.
As long as the farming operations were in effect, you know, during this, you know, prior to the farm bill, and they were participating in the previous program. But again, it also, before all the price support. There wasn't anything that a farmer had to do. Now we have application fees. Now we have premium payments. So we're functioning in that regard, at least a little bit, maybe more like a crop insurance product. And that has been the emphasis of this new farm bill. Now it's about risk management. Farmers looking at their operation, choosing their programs based on what they think the future holds and based on what their own individual operation looks like.
So they have to weigh the pros and cons. You know, can I afford the insurance if I don't get anything out of it this year, but it'd be good to have if I needed it, that type of thing.
That's exactly right. So yeah, these new programs are very interesting. And what we're in the process of doing right now is maintaining our farm records. We want to get our crop reports, make sure we have everything set up for 2014 and for any 2015 crop year, things like wheat or new seeded alfalfa. And what we're doing on the program side is farmers have an opportunity to update their farm record information. And that's actually what we base our payments off of. So they can reallocate base acres. In a lot of cases, farmers were getting paid for oat base and barley base, crops that hadn't been planted on their farms for a lot of years. Now we have an opportunity to update that based on a planting average from 2009 to 2012. And we are in the process of getting that information. Also updating yields. So not only were they paid on what their historic cropping patterns were, but also what the yields were of those crops. And of course, since the 1980s, a lot has changed as far as what farmers plant. We don't have as much barley in Huron County as we used to, of course, and we don't have as many acres of oats. And the things that we do plant, corn and soybeans and wheat, the yields are substantially higher. So now we're going to be basing our payments on updated crop information. And that's what farmers can do until February the 28th. After February the 28th, they can select their program. That'll be done by March 28th. So that's the second step. And then we're going to actually enroll farmers in the program for 2014 and 2015. And we expect if everything goes perfectly, which it probably won't, that enrollment will happen.
New programs do have their little quirks to them, don't they?
Exactly right. And this is one of those fun instances where we're actually implementing these programs on the local level without agency handbooks. So we've received training and we have notices and we have guidance from our state office, but the actual rules and all of the forms that we get to implement these programs, they're kind of coming to us piecemeal. So it's been an interesting farm bill to implement, but we're doing a good job with it.
Does this mean more record keeping for farmers to make these programs work best for them? You mentioned like the dairy program. Well, I would imagine yields are based on per cow, you know, because that's how you get it. You know, it's not just what you made last year and this year. If you had 100 cows last year and 120 now, you're going to be obviously making more. Do you have to keep better records of how many you had in the herd producing and these types of things that you might not have had to have in the past?
Well, the nice thing about the dairy program is because it functions more like an insurance product, like when you own a car and get insurance, the value of your car may change from year to year, but if you have replacement costs, if anything happens, you're covered. With the dairy program, we set a baseline production level from the 3 years previous. And so that was your coverage level. That is your coverage level for the duration of the farm bill. So under the old program, you had to report your monthly production. With this new farm bill, actually, it's less work for dairy producers. Now, on the crop side, one of the programs that we have that's replacing the direct program actually requires farmers to report their yields every year if an operator or producer wants to choose that program. But what we're seeing a lot of enrollment in is the programs that just either go off county information or just function more like a basic price support. So what we're seeing is that in some ways, it actually may be a little bit simpler to work with this farm bill, simpler to use, but more complex to make a decision on.
Yeah, it sounds like you need a degree.
Well, that's what we're finding, and we're getting conflicting information because what's happening is the commodity prices have dropped. So since the replacement for the direct program, these ARC and PLC programs function based on marketing year average prices, county prices. I think maybe this severe drop in commodity prices came as a bit of a surprise, maybe not to everybody, but from the farm bill standpoint, now we have programs that maybe were functioning more like a safety net, and we're realizing that the safety net, we've fallen off the wire, and we're going to use it. We're going to use it.
Is it solely based on, or does production costs come into play when you're doing these calculations. It's just quantity. It's not, you know, right now, a year ago, you were talking, you didn't, when they made the farm bill, they couldn't see these commodity prices. A year ago, nobody would have thought $1.97 gas. I mean, that's going to affect production for farmers as far as their bottom line, because they use a heck of a lot of fuel, and the other things that oil prices go down, fertilizer and other things, will probably end up going down as well, because there's less cost to make them.
Well, what farmers are selecting to replace what was previously just a payment that they received every single year for owning land that had a history of cropping is, under the new program, there's two different variations. One is just basically if commodity prices fall below a certain level, and in this case, the reference prices are $8.40 for soybeans, $5.50 for wheat, and $3.70 for corn. If prices fall below that level, a payment will trigger. If prices for those individual commodities stay above that those levels, you won't get a payment. So if a farmer thought that corn was going to stay substantially below $3.70 for the duration of this farm bill, so that's 2014 through 2018, that would be the program that they'd want to select. The other program kind of functions more like an average. It functions more like a revenue support. So that the first thing that I talked about is price support. If corn, wheat, soybeans, barley, oats fall below a certain level, you get a payment. In the other program, it functions a little more dynamically, in that instead of just having that price level, your support level is actually based off a 5-year Olympic average. So they take the high and the low. So the reason why we're thinking maybe we'll generate large payments is because the Olympic average of prices for the last 5 years is pretty impressive. We don't know exactly what our prices are going to be until the end of this 2014 marketing year, which will be kind of the end of the summer, beginning of fall. But we're looking at reference prices for corn at around $5.60. So if the marketing year average is below that price, which at this point, at least it certainly looks like it may be, then perhaps we'll generate pretty substantial payments. So it's different now. It's actually taking into account what's happening in the marketplace, what's happening with commodity prices. Farmers aren't just getting payments, but if prices fall below certain levels that the government set, then there are some opportunities for farmers to have maybe what we'd call a little bit of a buffer between the high prices that we've experienced in the past and the future, where it looks like we may have some low prices, some lower commodity prices.
Even in the last farm bill, they were constantly working towards, you know, a requirement that you do have crop insurance. Is that still a factor in all of your programmings? Do you still have to have that, or is this kind of in lieu of it?
For some of our loan programs, yes, you do have to have crop insurance, farm storage facility loans, that sort of thing. But what we're really running into now is, so we've encouraged farmers to take some of the risk management on their own shoulders by purchasing crop insurance, by participating in these programs. Now, with this new farm bill, one of the things that we're kind of running into is we're looking at a future where, in order to be eligible for crop insurance, which of course is a program that USDA does not directly administer through my office, you have to be in compliance with USDA environmental rules. So we have some producers in the area who did not participate in any programs, and they would farm land that was considered wetland. You'd see these big blocks of trees and these wet areas drained, areas that are environmentally sensitive tiled. And what we're seeing with this new farm bill, under the new farm title, farmers that do that those sort of activities now make themselves ineligible for even commercial crop insurance, because of course it's all underwritten by the federal government. So that's something that's going to change a lot up here, and it's going to come as quite a surprise to many people. And it's one of those things, in fact, just this week, farmers who do not have letters signed in our office saying that they are in compliance with those rules have been receiving letters. And it's going to be a little bit of a change, because there are some individuals in the area who, you know, were receiving some benefits not directly through USDA, but essentially federal underwriting of their crop insurance, who are now going to come under rules for protecting highly erodible areas and also wetlands. We don't have so many highly erodible areas, but we certainly do have a lot of wetlands here in Huron County.
And is this is there any factoring in of grandfathering some stuff in that was done before all of these rules took effect? I mean, you know, you can go far back and, you know, we were a swamp a long time ago. I mean, everybody technically, if you go back far enough, is there a point that, you know, if you did this 10 years ago, well, it isn't a factor anymore because it's been in production 10 years this way? Or does it just look at what it should be today?
The highly erodible and wetland rules that we look at are actually from 1985. So anything that had been converted prior to that was sort of grandfathered in.
But anything tiled in 85 probably needs retiling by now.
Right. So what we're looking at primarily are areas that have been disturbed since that point. So a lot of what we looked at, and really a large portion of the Huron County Farmers Have Been Program participating, we're looking at stuff that's really been converted maybe in the last 12 to 24 months. These high commodity prices encouraged a lot of people to bring land into production that had not previously been in production. So these are the parcels that the law was...
The ones that came out of the protective programs that they didn't renew because I could make more money than I got for the payment for keeping it a swamp.
Correct. So these are the areas that we're really taking a close look at. And I know I've spoken to a lot of crop insurance agents locally. In a lot of cases, these individuals knew that they were farming environmentally sensitive areas. They weren't reporting it to the USDA office. They weren't reporting the crops. They weren't participating in programs. But now it's all going to come under the same umbrella. And we have a lot of tools to work with people to get them back in compliance. But it's going to be a little bit of a shift for us.
And is there a simple way a farmer knows about which lands are considered, you know, normal agricultural lands and which are wetlands and erodible? I mean, is this part of the land description on the title, or is this something you have to research?
Actually, in order to be eligible for farm payments, this rule has been in effect for our program participants for quite a few years. And so we know where these tracts are. And in some cases, what's happening is now crop insurance is the reason why we're seeing these parcels flagged. As a normal participant in USDA programs, every year you either have an active form or you sign a form that says that you are in compliance with our rules. And that's a vast majority of farmers in the listening area. And what we're finding is that these are outlier cases. These are tracts that operators knew were not in compliance with USDA rules, and they just weren't participating with USDA. They were getting crop insurance on these farmed acres, but they weren't getting USDA payments. Now that everything is coming back together, that is going to be, you know, tracking down these parcels and making sure that they're in compliance or fixing whatever damage has been done to it. That's going to be quite a mountain of work for us for the next couple of years.
Oh, they just love to pile it on, don't they?
Well, and it's worth it because
Do you get resistance from farmers? I mean, you know, there is this thing, you know, it's my land, I want to do with that what I want. You know, you buy land as a farmer to farm. You don't buy land to say, okay, this is a wetland, and now I can't even sell it because nobody wants it because they can't farm it.
In some cases, yeah, there's some of that, you know, don't tell me how to farm type sentiments. But what it really comes down to is USDA and the Farm Service Agency in this county are here to help farmers. We're here to help them conserve environmentally sensitive land. We're here to support prices when crazy times happen. Our interest is in supporting agriculture and supporting farmers through the good times and through the bad. And our programs exist in some sense without, you know, putting the environmental hat on. The problem of agriculture for the last, you know, several generations has been overproduction. We have overproduction and prices fall. So some of these rules exist to maybe prevent some problems before they start. And so as we see commodity prices dropping, I think maybe we'll see some of this more marginal land falling out of production again. You know, $7 corn makes some pieces of land that were maybe sandy or wet or untiled, it makes it feasible to farm. Now those parcels, I think we'll maybe see some of them fall out of production. And again, these
because
rules...
they won't get the yield that would make them profitable.
Exactly. So a lot of our rules that exist that seem overly restrictive, they exist for a reason. They exist because we're trying to work with farmers. We're trying to work with the agricultural sector to really protect areas of land that maybe are suboptimal for farming in the first place.
Hasn't there always been method to our madness of overproduction? I mean, we're such a huge country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somewhere, some agricultural area is going to suffer something, a drought, storms, hail, something's going to ruin their crop. You have overproduction, you have a part of the country that's still got food to feed and for animals and all the other things we do with these commodities. Hasn't that kind of been what we've been doing in the past?
Yeah, and it makes the country great, really. So cheap, safe, plentiful food supply. That is what we do. And
if we marginalized it to where we just grew exactly what we needed and we had a problem, then we're at the mercy of wherever else they're growing it.
Right. And with these farm programs, so we're seeing that there's some acknowledgement of that as well. So it's not functioning as an accelerator or a brake. It's just functioning as a buffer. And it's acknowledging, especially with this new farm bill, with the new term really being risk management, we are, you know, these payments are reflecting what is actually really happening in the agricultural markets, and either giving price protection or revenue protection, and really the farmers deciding what do they want. Do they want that 370 protection for corn, or do they want the five-year Olympic average protection using county yields or using their own individual information? And so that's why this farm bill, as difficult as it's going to be to implement locally, because it's so complex and it's such a difficult decision for an operator to make, it really is a great opportunity because it is focusing on what is really happening. What have you really planted? What are your yields really? What's actually happening in commodity markets? What are you trying to accomplish on your farm? Are you trying price protection or are you trying revenue protection? And we have the options now. Before, maybe our tools were a little bit more like just, you know, rocks and hammers, and we would go after problems. Now we have some finer tuning that we can do with our tools, because we can look at your farming operation and really have a tool that you can use to give you a little bit more certainty as you make planting decisions, make decisions about crop insurance, make decisions about succession. And that's, as difficult as it will be, that's been the best part of this new farm bill, and that's been the most fun that we've been having, just having farm programs that reflect what's really going on.
The prices they use in calculating, you know, is it regionalized? Because the prices a farmer gets around here for their crop may be different than a price in California, or someone who just grows a little bit of that crop in a state that doesn't have as much agriculture, and the prices would vary around the country. Is it regionalized enough that it really reflects what you're getting locally?
No, it's national. It's national. And what we're running into, especially with the dairy program, is so the national price that we're looking at adjusted for national feed prices, and we have a ratio of corn, protein, and hay. But if you're a Michigan farmer, we can grow commodities pretty cheaply. We grow good hay. We do well. But in California, feed is a lot more expensive. So there has been some grumbling, but it hasn't been in places like Michigan. It's been in places like California, where under the dairy program, your feed prices might be a little bit higher. So our state, we did pretty well with this farm bill, and having the Senate chairperson of the Ag Committee being Michigan's Debbie Stabenow didn't hurt the state either, certainly. And so we've benefited in a lot of ways, having special programs for fruit losses back in 2012. There's been a lot of local benefits to having the Farm Bill process proceed as it did. And we've been implementing these programs. We had some payments go out for frost and freeze losses in 2012, so we still have some disaster programs. We've been enrolling in the dairy program and looking at national prices that reflect Michigan better than maybe other places in the country. So it's been a good farm bill for Michigan.
Well, good to hear, because this is where we're at. California also has the water problem. I mean, you have a dairy operation there, you're going to be paying to water these cows too if you don't have a stream. They're hurting in other parts of the country where we are blessed.
Yeah, certainly everywhere has its fair share of weather difficulties. Just the nature of being a farmer. The last couple of years have been great for the area. So we're certainly hoping for another one for 2015.
We've talked a bit about the programs. We haven't really talked about what do farmers need to do right now. Do they need to come in? Do they need to just get their stuff together? They're already getting into their tax time and everything else in this kind of off season. So they're going to want to get this stuff done in a timely manner, and they want to know their ducks are in line.
Right. So, again, the first step is before February 28th, we want to take a look at reallocating your base acres, which is the
That means an appointment and stopping in.
That means an appointment and stopping in by February 28th to look at a yield update to increase your yields on your farms. And reallocate base if that's the best decision. In some cases, under our reallocations, we've seen farmers losing corn base, which is kind of archaic, but any of the farmers that are listening will know what that means. And in some cases, we don't want to do that, so we'll keep the information as it stands. But we also want to update yields, and we have until February 28th to do that.
And they have to make an appointment. This isn't something you just walk in and do, because you're going to want to pull files and have things ready, so it's it's a slick process to get through, and everybody doesn't have to wait around.
Right. And remember, I mean, we're still kind of, we still have a lot of producers who did not report crops in 2014, much less any wheat that they planted for the 2015 crop year or new seeded alfalfa. So at the very least, report 2015 crops, take care of 2014 if it's not done, get all of this taken care of before February the 28th, which is kind of rapidly approaching. And then after that, we have until the end of March to select which program we want to be in for the crops. And then from that point, we'll do enrollments in the summer. So February 28th is kind of a drop dead date for,
and it's coming up quicker than people think.
Very much so. Yeah, but a February 28th date, a March 28th date, and then this summer we'll have other deadlines. This is, of course, as soon as I mention a deadline, USDA always extends it out on me, as we did with the dairy program a few times. But getting that taken care of sooner rather than later is, of course, in everybody's best interest.
And it's not like you're out wandering the North 40 today, unless you're searching for cows that are buried. But other than that, no.
You'd have to be,
not a day to be out.
You'd have to be bundled up pretty well on a day like today, and it looks like the rest of the week that's expected, it's going to be more of the same. So for all those people who are wishing for a white Christmas, I fear maybe it's come back with a bit of a vengeance.
Do farmers typically know what they need to bring when they're doing all of this activity by March 28th, or do you need to talk to them before they come in and make sure they're going to bring in everything you need so you get it done the first time around?
Well, we're running into a little bit of difficulty, so we want to increase those yields. And so what do farmers want to have with them or have an awareness of? The issue that we're running into is we're getting a lot of crop insurance information in, and crop insurance information is good, but sometimes it's a little archaic, like APHs and appraised yields. And what we really need is a good sense of what your yields were.
Those are the receipts you got when you sold it or dropped it off at the elevator, those types of things. I'm not a farmer, so I don't know.
Yeah, that certainly works. Another good thing is if you have crop insurance records that are actually that show actual appraisals from 2008 to 2012, those are the years we're looking at. So actual appraisals are good. Just your own records are fine. And then what we want to do is we want to update your yields, because for one of the programs in this farm bill and for maybe in the future, having your yields updated can very much increase the amount of payment that you will receive. And so it's important to do. It's important to do.
Okay. Later in the year, are they still going to have to do the typical crop reporting?
Yeah, and the fun thing is we're actually going to have to do it for 15, and in cases where we didn't have 14, we'll have to do it for 14 as well, which should be interesting. And what I'm hoping is that we'll be able to do 14 and 15 enrollment at the same time, and then we'll see payments for the new crop program go out, if everything goes perfectly, which it probably will not, in October of this fall of 2015. And 15 payments, 2015 payments will be 1 year later. So this program payment is staggered. It's not like previous years. It's based on the marketing year has to have closed before we can figure out what the payments are.
But it's still those typical things of reporting crop acreage is still the norm.
Normal maintenance. And again, just an awareness that even if someone doesn't want to participate in USDA programs, that if they're farming areas that maybe they're getting crop insurance on and they know that there's a wetland violation, maybe just an awareness that that could become an issue here within the next year or two as USDA and crop insurance records start to align a little bit more closely.
Is there a, I mean, do you have to restore it to a wetland, or can you just stop farming it and let it go back to what it is? I mean, there's two ways of going about it. You do have programs, I know, that help create habitat and stuff like that, but and conserve acreage that is sensitive. But, you know, do they have to get involved in that type of a program to get it back to where it was, or can they let nature take its course?
Usually there's a remediation plan, and then depending on what our conservation agencies have to say, sometimes it is just left alone, left fallow, and in some cases a restoration is required. So it's really kind of on a case-by-case basis. And it also, of course, has to do with who originally initiated the violation. If it was someone who, you know, wasn't, you know, if you're farming a piece of property that I cleared 15 years ago and you had no idea it was a problem, certainly we have some opportunities to say it was a third-party conversion, and then you end up not being penalized for it. But of course, you can't farm those sensitive acres. So it can get a bit weedy, but we certainly are going
to. Weedy is good if you're trying to go back to
it. Yeah, exactly. but yeah, we've been going through the process with a few area producers, and we're starting to get pretty good at it. So
every time they change the farm bill, there's new things for farmers to concern themselves with and get up to speed on.
Well, these last programs, they stayed the same for a couple of farm bills, so it was stable sort of from 2002 through 2013, and now we're living in a world that's quite a bit different from a program standpoint. Of course, we still have our conservation programs, which we're seeing just amazing. Some filter strips that farmers thought to enroll, I've been seeing as high as $275 an acre for 10-year conservation contracts, which is really great. And so, I mean, we're seeing some renewed interest in CRP that is kind of a bit of a surprise, but perhaps not, maybe with larger equipment, power lines going in some areas of the county, making some areas of fields and less feasible to farm.
Those little triangle parts, you know, where you just can't get the big planter and the big harvester into there. You're just looking at it going, what am I going to do next?
And those are perfect for CRP, and especially if the government's willing to kind of protect those areas that are adjacent to waterways and pay $250, you know, anywhere in the 200s per acre. That's a pretty good deal. Everybody really benefits with a program like that. And so I'm glad that our conservation programs were brought forward. We're seeing some new things that we're going to be learning about honeybee habitat. That seems to be a kind of a new focus, and so we're going to be working with our conservation agencies to talk more about that program here this summer.
That becomes more important the more we diversify. You know, crops that are fruits and such, they really rely on the bees.
And again, we're seeing just a farm bill that's more responsive to beginning farmers, commodities that are maybe less, less mainstream, so some beginning producers that are starting to grow some other crops. We want to let individuals know that if you're growing a crop that isn't insured through crop insurance, there is insurance available through USDA, through our non-insured program, and there's a lot of good benefits in that program as well. And what we're hoping is, you know, better representation of what's going on in our rural areas, better programs for farmers that are more reflective of what they're actually doing on their operations, and continuing to keep a good handle on, you know, sensitive environmental areas. We're just trying to balance everything right now, and this farm bill's given us some tools to do that.
And it's locked in for the next 5 years, so it's, you got a kind of an idea of what's going to happen.
Law of the land until 2018.
Unless changed by a 2/3 majority. But, you know, once they start seeing they're going to be paying out a lot, they might find loopholes that they're going to have to do, because they just can't print it.
True.
But at least at this point it does look good. You might want to check it out. Is this something that there's like websites that can help you further understand the programs? Because we can't do it all on the air here. Does the USDA have a site that may be able to help explain some of these programs, what you're going to need, what can eliminate you from it, like doing the wetlands thing with farming that?
Well, there is a meeting at the Expo Center that MSU Extension is holding that is discussing these farm bill programs.
Really? When's that coming up?
That's going to be on January the 19th. At, I believe, 9 o'clock in the morning, again, over at the fairgrounds. And I expect there'll be good attendance there. We did another session, and there was quite a few growers that showed up. And And that's to answer your question. Honestly, the best way to do it is just contact the office, give us a call, talk to us, let us know that you're coming. We'll pull your farm records and we'll tell you what you need to do. Really, the best, these programs are so complex that going to, you know, an MSU training meeting, talking to MSU folks, stopping by your USDA service center is really the way that we can get you the information that you need. Because again, every farming operation is different. So one person's farming operation may auger into one program and another form of operation may head into another direction. So we can work through all those situations with you. If you just stop by the office, let us know you're going to be by. And we'll get you taken care of.
Appreciate it. Most farmers think of this as kind of the slow time. Sounds like for you, it's not.
it's going to be busy. We were busy right before the holidays, like we started with the commodity loans, and now we're heading into this farm bill implementation. But we were without a farm bill for a while, and we were waiting, and we've been rewarded with a large amount of workload. It will keep us busy right through 2018.
And you've got all the other work you do in the office, updating maps and everything else. I mean, it just never stops.
Never stops.
Thanks for being with us. If they have questions or want to make an appointment, the number out there is
269-9549. And yeah, we're happy to help in any way that we can.
And the sooner you call, the sooner you get the appointment time of your choice, because if they start getting locked up, you only have so many people that can sit down and talk to people at any given time. So make your appointment early and get the time you want.
And again, what we're seeing with projected program payments, it will be very well worth anyone's while to take a look at this farm bill, see what it can do for your farming operation, and find out what program will work best.
And the deadline's the 28th. You can't guarantee it's going to be extended, so don't count on that.
Anytime I think they won't, they do, and anytime I think they will, they don't. So I'm not, my prediction skills haven't been so good with how Washington will handle program sign up, but we're certainly trying to be as flexible as possible.
You're in good company not being able to figure out Washington. Thanks for being with us today.
Always great to be here.
Our guest today on the program has been Nathan Prill, Executive Director of the Huron County Farm Service Agency office in Bad Axe. Again, the deadline, the 28th, to get yourself in the first step of the programs, the new programs in the Farm Bill. You need to contact them, set up an appointment so they can work through all the documentation and paperwork they need to get you ready for step number two. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news. Keep it right here at WLEW.